Just to give you a sense, it's connected, by the way, it's connected to the issue that we started out to discuss. The premise, taking issue with the premise that's brought down by Rashi, it's a very important chazal, that the manner in which Yaakov was tricked into marrying Leah had to do with Ramos, the deception. Now, of course, there's no doubt that this was the deception of Lavan. And when Yaakov realizes, he only confronts Lavan, the Lomor in his son. Okay. But the question is, how was he able to do so? Now, because there's a chazal all that, that there was simanim, that Yaakov suspected it, and he gave simanim to Rachel to protect himself. But Rachel, sensing that her sister would be embarrassed, gave over those simanim. Now, this creates many, many questions. That's another reason why, I mean, everybody teaches children Chumash with Rashi, and I wonder what impression it leaves. I mean, I don't know that any rabbin basically can explain that. The kid asks the question, is it permitted to do that? So then they resort to the fact that, well, they're different, you know, we can't question them, they're on a different plane, and we can't. nobody can explain and justify that behavior. We could deduce principles from that behavior that can apply to our situation. So basically, you're left with the area that's wrong, for us it's wrong. But for them, they knew things, they were close to Hashem, whatever, and whatever they did, we just have to assume it's true. I'm not saying that there aren't cases. We don't claim that we understand everything that the Avos did. They were on a different plane than us. But by and large, they did live, I mean, they're role models, they did live according to the rules of justice, and we're supposed to learn from them and apply it to our own case. True, Yaakov deceived his father upon the command of his mother, and that's a problem that has to be dealt with. And that is something which all the Mepharshim deal with and explain. But that is something you can learn from. But there are cases, because we don't believe that telling a lie is an absolute in and of itself. You know, it's an inherent type of an evil. It's a basic rule in some ethics that lying is something which is unethical. But yeah, it's within a context. It's in a lot. There's a larger context. But truth, basically the reason over there is because it's all part of Midas and the Metaphorical, which is MS. And the reason why you can't lie is because it detracts from MS. But there are certain situations where the very if you're not going to lie, it's going to lead to a greater distortion of truth, as you know. Many people manipulate these facts and situations, and it's going to be Asa was engaged in trying to promote a very big lie, and the only way to prevent that was by telling a smaller lie, so to speak. So that's justifiable. It has to work that way. It's not an absolute, so that's different. You see? So there we learn something which is very, very useful. Therefore we know that there are certain situations in which you're permitted to lie. You're supposed to lie for shalom bayis, because it's not an absolute in and of itself. It's part of a greater context. But now, the burden would be to show that a similar thing over here. Now show me why is the person justified simply because they want to be involved in building a Klal Yisrael, and they want to be part of this family and so forth, to force the trick, to deceive somebody into marrying. What do you learn from that? That you can do it? That if you have a very, very significant reason why you want to marry this particular girl because of the family background and you're produced a deacon, so therefore you can engage in all kinds of deception. So you can deceive her into marrying you. You can create all kinds of false impressions that you're a multi-millionaire and that you come from this family background with the Gedolim, all of it's false. And on that basis, she relies on she'll marry you. And you're like, do that? And so what do we, why not? And then if it turns out that you did it, so we should forgive you because you were the Shem Shemayim. Is that true? That a person is forgiven for a crime that they've committed because the motivation was pure? Interestingly enough, over here, we see that God saw that she was hated, and God took pity on her. This becomes the other problem. Because why was she hated? If you're gonna take that approach, it's because Yaakov was upset that she participated in Ramos. And if he knew that she participated in Ramos, so why didn't he divorce her? I mean, Chazal deal with it. I mean, Chazal have taken this approach. No question about it, that it has to do with the Siman. Well, it's not evident in the Pesukim at all, in my opinion. Now the question is whether this chazal is pshuta, that's the way you have to understand the pasuk, or whether there's an alternative way. I mentioned the Rabbi Chase, and he generally is always taking the position that to merge a chazal, because you see, I mean, other commentators, Ramban, the Ebenezer, they all quote chazals, and they either agree or disagree, they don't feel bound that this is the pshat. So it's always been his approach, but he said this is a big chazal, you know, like everybody accepts it, it's like an eighth. But I've seen other commentators that don't accept it. So they said, look, you know, no, you can still give Yishia, you can still give another alternative, whatever. I mean, I present it for what it's worth. I present it respectfully. Why can't I learn this way? That's the framework in which I presented it. Start off Chaf Tes Lamed, where this whole issue begins. This is Vayevo Gan Ol Rachel, and he was together also with Rachel. Vayev Ganas Rachel Mivayev, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. But from there you see it's very ambivalent. There the implication is that he loved her more, but that's not that he didn't love her. And then he worked another 7 years. She perpetrated this Ramos on him, so why did he love her? If you want to say that he loves her, but he loves Rachel more. Then it's Vayar Hashem Tishnu Aleya, that God saw that she was hated. Vayiftachas Rachel. And he opened her womb for Rachel Akara. So from there it would seem that she was hated. God saw. Now, the subsequent behavior, so then Leah conceives, gives birth, and she tells Reuven, because God saw my affliction. Well, now my husband will love me. So clearly in her mind, she was afflicted, she wasn't right. Of course, and then it doesn't work, apparently. Vataro, the tale of Ben. Kisham Hashem kisnu anochi. God has heard that I am hated. Vayitim gam ezeh. Vatikra shmo shimo. Now it seems that she was struggling against this fact. She couldn't accept the fact that her husband disliked her, or hated her, whatever term you want to use. But let me ask you a question. If she was involved in this Ramos, then she would have known that this wasn't his choice, that he wanted to marry another woman. What did she expect? Why would she expect it to be otherwise? They have nothing to do with what is she praying for, and how is children going to change the situation if the real problem is that he has complaints against you. Why didn't she deal with the issue then and plead her case and explain why she did it? And there's the pure motives and all of that. I mean, aside from the fact that you have other problems of Rosisna Khatika Bubalechan, even the Fulman Torah, that you're not permitted to hate someone. So Yaakov, you could ask a question on Yaakov also, why did he allow himself to be in a situation where he hated someone? He's supposed to be Mochiacha. So why was he Mochiacha? Or divorcer. But primarily speaking, there has to be Hokacha. Yet he wasn't Mochiacha, he was Mochiacha. Love on. Yeah, but according to the Shah of Chazal, she's just as much to be rebuked. Why is she any less guilty in perpetrating it? And the truth of the matter is, for me, why is Rachel getting off of it? If Rachel gave away the Simonim, I mean, I'd feel betrayed. If I was in a situation, I'd feel betrayed by everybody. We'll look later on in Paraglamid, Tezvav, which is this thing with the Dudaim. So Reuven found Dudaim, and apparently this is something which was beneficial in having children, fertility. And she brought them to Leah, and he brought them to his mother Leah. And Rachel said to Leah, to me, please give me from the Dudaim, because she was struggling with her own inability to have children. Let's take a look at the next passage. And she said to her, is it not enough to take my husband? Well, Akarat Gamma is too dry to me. You're going to take the Dudaim too? But some of them look. Rachel, Lachain Yishkav Imach, Halayla Tzachat Dudaim B'nei. So she was going to give up her own time, her own appointment with the Yaakov that night in order to receive the Dudaim. I mean, that's also a little bit difficult. What kind of deal is this now? That's a separate issue. But the language of Leah is quite striking. She's giving Rachel an argument for taking husbands. Hold it, slow down. Now, according to the classical interpretation, Rachel should have responded. I took your, I think it's just the opposite. It's you who took my husband and I helped you. I saved you from me, and if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't even have a husband. I could have blown the whole cover right there. But she doesn't say that. Now, why doesn't she say that? But tzitzis prevents us from saying that too? I mean, how far are we supposed to go? Plain text, as you read the story, you do not get that sense at all. You get the sense that Leah, two factors I've shown you. Leah is very disappointed in the fact that her husband doesn't love her. When we're not disappointed at all. We know the truth. We know that he didn't want to marry her, and he was deceived into marrying her. Now, any person would realize that you can't expect someone to love you. In that situation, yet Leah doesn't know that. And later on, when she speaks to Rachel, she accuses Rachel of being the usurper. She's broken into the marriage, and she's stolen the husband. She blames it on her sister. And they had another question. I had another question. And that is the very idea. See, the pshat of Rashi, Rashi's coming from the angle that Rashi has a number of different. That Yaakov, when he came to Haran, was aware of the nature of love. He was a trickster and he was a Ramad. The Rashi, mentions that when Yaakov encounters Rachel. And, sorry? When you get back to Perek HaTes, when Yaakov first encounters Rachel, so it says in Pasuk Yudbeis, "Vayagad Yaakov l'Rachel." Yaakov told Rachel, "Ki achi aviyahu." He was the brother of her father, which is not literally true. But you know, the Torah uses the term brother as a kinsman, as a relative. Avram uses the term that way. So that's not a problem. Karov, Rashi, "Ki achi aviyahu karov l'aviyah." Kamo anashim achem anachem. We're brothers. So the term brother is used to be karov, to imply karov. Who made Rasha? Now here's the medrash. In the Ramos Ubab, if he's coming at me with Ramos, Gamani Achav Ramos. So too am I his brother in Ramos. The Adam Kusher who, and if he's an Adam Kusher, if he's going to treat me appropriately, Gamani Ben Rifka, Achos Achera. But there's an implication. Achi Aviyah and Ben Rivka. There's a hidden message. Now, according to this, you see, Rashi's building up his case. You understand why Rashi's doing this. We have to account for the fact that he was deceived. Now, according to this, Yaakov suspected that Laban could be a deceiver, so he's sort of giving a warning. But don't think that I'm a tzaddik. I know how you look at the tzaddik. The tzaddik is a neverful, he's a pious guy, he trusts everybody, he's naive. I'm not that kind of a tzaddik. I have a totally different approach to tzitzis. So I'm a rational individual, and I prefer to deal righteously and not to have to deal with deception, but I have the capacity to do so. Because it's a rational system that I operate with. Now in Yudches, Vayav Yaakov is Rachel, and he loved Rachel, Vayomer, and he said, Avotcha Sheva Shanim. I'll work 7 years for Rachel Bitchaktan. Now we hear again Rashi. For Rachel Bitchaktan, Kalas Yimarim Halalu Lama. Why did he need all of these expressions? Rachel Bitchaktan. Now Rashi learns that on the midrashic level that all this is necessary. It's a protection against being deceived. Because he knew that he was a deceiver. Amalo, he says, if he would have said Avot Chalur Rachel, if he would have said Rachel, B'Shem Atoma, Rachel Acharas Meshuk, then he would have tricked him. He would have gotten a different Rachel from the Shuk. Tam Alom Abitcha, B'Shem Atoma, Achalef, Leleya Shema, B'Tikr Shema Rachel. Sounds a little far-fetched. In other words, if he would have said Rachel, so he could have gotten somebody else, because he's Rachel. If he would have said Bitcha Rachel, so then he could have switched the name. Could have worked it out. Talmud Lomar Ketana. So he had to say all three things. Rachel, Bitcha, Ketana, so there's no way that he could have deceived him. The FLP came, Laholo, Sharei Rimo. Nevertheless, it didn't work because he deceived him. Now, a lot of this does sound far-fetched, but the truth is an outside tale, which you understand. With this manipulation of words, I mean, this is clearly with the whole, you know, investigation of Clinton and the terms and what does it mean, and what does this word mean, and that, I don't know what the word is means, and, you know, all this type of thing. It sounds, when you read it, it sounds strange. Like, how could people do things like that? But you see, today, this is mild compared to imagine, you know, if you put Clinton in the place of Lovon, and imagine the same situation, that he could say this was really that, and he could do that, this is what I meant, and I, of course that's a name, but that was a name originally. What name are you talking about? What she was named was the day that she was born, or are you talking about the name that occurred now? There's all kinds of naming. You could see that Clinton would be much more successful probably than Lovon was. Rajshava Pekin is to say that in spite of the precautions, it shows you how tricky he was. That you can't just use ordinary precautions. I guess he felt it would indicate that Yaakov wasn't aware of the extent of the problem. So sometimes you're dealing with a guy, there's different levels of business, or people. You don't even have to explain. We understand each other, we know exactly what we meant, and there's no need to work it out. And there's another type of a guy, of course still something happens, but there's a certain type of guy where you understand each other, that's it. No need to write it all out. And there's another kind of a guy that when you dealt with him once in general terms, you know, then he interpreted it differently. So then you spell it out. When you spell it out, he'll stick to that. You see? Then there's another type of guy that even if you spell it out, he'll find a way of getting around that too. You see, apparently Yaakov underestimated the extent of the Ramah over here. Actually, he's building up the case for Yaakov. The Yaakov wasn't that naive, was suspicious, and did take pains to protect himself, because take a look at now at Chafei. Well, the pasuk really, this is chuto. This is, the pasuk is really directing you. It's saying, and it was in the morning, and she was Leah, which indicates that at night she wasn't Leah. But at night she wasn't like him. At night she was somebody else. She was Rachel. What does that mean? Here he introduced this idea. Because Yaakov gave to Rachel Simanim, Uksherosa Rachel Shemachisim Aleah, and when Rachel said that they're bringing him Leah, Amra, she said, Akshav Chalei Mosi, Tikalei Mosi. Now my sister will be embarrassed. Amdu Masra Allah Osa Simanim. That's from the Gemara. To Gemara. She gave her the Simanim to protect her from the embarrassment. So you see that Yaakov did take, according to this interpretation, Yaakov was prepared, was expecting something, and he took two types of precaution, Rachel Bitchak Tana, and also he gave over the Simanim. Now, my question is, if you're going to maintain that, if you're going to say that Yaakov was fully aware of the character of Lavan, that he regarded him as being that type of a trickster, then it seems to me that he would not have been tricked. Because he still relied on Simanim and so on. Basically, you go to the wedding, you have your people, and you check. You know, like, it's not the most difficult thing to find out.
Not like the whole thing is blindfolded.
Yeah, I mean, even though it was at night, it's true, was it night, it's true, it's sneers and whatever you want to say, but if you are really expecting to be tricked, it's very hard for me to believe that you can't just pick a candle and take a look, pick up the veil, or have somebody. It could be arranged easily. Ask one of the girls to do it, to check it out for you in an indiscreet kind of a way. It still doesn't satisfy me that he was tricked. It doesn't satisfy me. You don't have to rely on Simanim. You can question, you can talk. You're in the tent. I mean, you can't put a light on in the tent. They didn't have lights. Bottom line, it's very hard. Anything is possible in this world, but it's very hard to imagine that he would be deceived in spite of this whole thing. Yeah, that's it. Now, you have all the other questions that I've raised. If that's the case, then you have many questions on how could Leah participate in the deception, my mom. Just because she had proper motives doesn't justify what she did. And then you have the question of how could the Rachel do that? Just because Rachel wanted to save her sister from embarrassment, is that the, so? What are we supposed to learn in such a situation? You're supposed to aid the thief because they're going to be embarrassed if they're caught.
What about Yaakov?
he has to pay, he has to work for 7 years. The truth is that if she's involved in a deception, she does not deserve to be saved from the embarrassment. First, not to face the embarrassment. Look, I'm not going to, I see somebody stealing from you. I'm not going to report it because you'll be embarrassed. You put the embarrassment yourself. You can't have a system of bezdin. You can report a person to the bezdin. Well, the person will be embarrassed. Well, that's not embarrassing is when, for no reason, you go out of your way and you cause this person a hurt. But yeah, it's an injustice. Here's the, you're not causing the person embarrassment. You're involved in doing justice. That, that's going to cause embarrassment to him. That's not you. That's justice. But here, everything is being inverted. It raises many, many questions, but I don't see anybody addressing himself to these questions. Other than they say that God had mercy. Well, so why did God have mercy? Because God knew that she did it with shame and mind. I understand, but even that becomes difficult. Because it leaves open the door that now it doesn't really matter what you're doing, as long as you're doing with shame and mind. He's pointing out, too, that according to this, Rachel was giving up her marriage. Because she did not know what would happen. How could she predict that love on would make this offer and that Yaakov would even take it, that he'd work with her 7 years. How do you know? How'd she know, rather? So according to this, she's giving up her own marriage just to prevent her sister from a momentary embarrassment, which she deserves.
So what did she embarrass
him? So interesting that you never find, in the very next passage, as I said before, you find Yaakov rebuking Laban. Hello, Baruchel, about the... He blames it on Laban, but he doesn't go down the line. He doesn't confront Rachel, and he doesn't confront Leah. I maintain that when Yaakov came to Charan, and his mother Rivka had sent him there, and she did not give him, at least it's not recorded in the code, that she gave him any kind of a warning. It seems to me, and these are one after the other, the basic premises is that at this point in time Rivka really did not know the nature of Laban. When she left home she was very young, and Laban seems to be a righteous individual. We do see it, the conversation with Eliezer, he was there, he was the main figure, more so than Basuleh. All the Mepharshim emphasized it, that Laban occupied a position of importance, the older brother, and they said may Hashem Yatzadah. So they were very high level people. Avram had chosen to marry the daughter from that family, and when Eliezer told them over all these events that it was really Hashkacha and the will of God, they accepted it 100%. How can we lo hu kol davar lecharato? We can't. It seemed at that point in time that they were completely in line with the will of God and the Hashkacha. And then of course they said they wanted to wait a while, so they said let's ask Rivka, and she wanted to go, so they let her go. But Rivka left the house. She was a young girl. And the only thing she would have seen would have been, I don't think that she would have seen the Ramah. It's true she was more astute in the way in the world, due to the place that she had come from, due to her nature, and she was able to see through an Esau, but that doesn't mean because she was able to see through a Laban, or that she had any knowledge about Laban. Clearly, if that was the case, why would she put Yaakov in the hands of a Laban who was B.K. Shlach or Sakol, which he put us on? I mean, it's one thing to save from Esau, but she's not going to put him in the hands of someone that could wipe him out. Or she certainly would have warned him, would have prepared him. So I maintain that it's hard for me to accept the fact that he was really prepared. He basically, in my opinion, had a positive impression of Laban as being, that's why he said that he's achi aviyah. He called himself the brother of her father, which means we're alike, we're kinsmen, which is a compliment to Laban. Now, if you follow what happened after that, how did Laban behave towards him? How did Laban behave towards him? Very nicely. Because it says, when Laban heard the news of Yaakov ben Achoso, his nephew, by Yaretz, by Grosso, by Yechabeklo, by Yanashaklo, and he hugged him, and he brought him to his house, and he told Laban everything that had occurred, all the incidents that had occurred. Now, at this point in time, of course, Rashi is bringing in these Midrashim and knocking him. They really, he was, that Laban was interested in the money because of Eliezer. Maybe that's, whatever the case, that's not the plain shot. That's a subterranean phenomenon. Yaakov's not aware of that, anyway. Even if we accept that, Yaakov is not aware of that. The behavior that he manifested was one of great love. And then he brings him into his house. Vayesh Achriz is Atzmi Yusori Yata. Vayesh Kodesh Anim. No. But then he says to him, you're my brother and you should work for free. Apparently Yaakov, he brought him into the house. And Yaakov wasn't a freeloader. He wasn't the kind of person that wanted something or nothing. So he was working and all that. So then he said to him, you're my brother. And you should work for me for free. So that's a high level individual. Here he's brought him into his house. And Yaakov only feels it's right that he should earn his stay. And yet Lavan is saying, you're my brother, I don't want you to work for free. Tell me what's your master tefa, what your wage is. Then Shtevanos, Shema Zola, Leah, etc. And then it described the two. Then it said the Yaakov loved Rachel, and he said, I'll work 7 years for Rachel Bichatana. Okay? So that was the agreement. Now if you'll ask me, why does it say Baruch of Bitfatana? Rashi is a Jewish. Why? It's plain simple. It's not very difficult. It seems to me, you see, there was a reality. The way Lavan was able to deceive Yaakov, the answer that he gave, Lo Osa Kain and Komeda, he tried to defend himself. He had to have some kind of an answer. And the explanation was basically, I didn't deceive you, I really intended to do the right thing, but you don't know, I underestimated the power of the minhagim of the place. By the way, this happens very, very frequently. You know, people underestimate, you know, they decide they're going to do it, you know, when they get married, they're going to say something learning, and yeah, and so, but then there's tremendous family pressures, societal pressures, and so on and so forth, then you see, like, after a few years, they're living the same lifestyle as everybody else. Right, so if you're an independent person, you don't warrant them going, yeah, well, you know, it's societal pressure. Basically, that's what Lavan was telling him. I can't buck the whole society. Can't buck the whole society. That's the way it's done. I didn't realize it. I didn't realize that it would be so strong. I figured, I'll do what I think is right. She'll be married. She'll be married. That's true, too. Yeah, 7 years. Now, the reason why he offered 7 years. 7 years is like a high price to pay. It sounds like a lot. Big dowry. Is because we're Rachel Bitchak Tana. Because Yaakov is agreeing. But this is unusual. The normal thing is that the older daughter goes first. Right? So I don't want to... So I'm going to give 7 years. Because I realize that, first of all, for you it's a greater burden. It's worth more because it's the younger daughter. And I'm 7 years. Within 7 years, hopefully she will have somebody. And if not, I'm making it worth your while to buck the minute I'm up. That's why he says the record becomes time. The pasuk on the plain level is explaining why he offered so much. 7 years is a long time. The reason why is because it's becomes time, so it's an exception to the rule. So for exception to the rule, you got to pay more. I maintain that. Then it says, he worked for 7 years. He worked for 7 years. What does it mean he worked for 7 years? You know, later on, when he finally rebukes love and the ne'amonos, the honesty with which he worked. He was out in the fields, he left the house, he was out in the fields, he was working day and night, and whatever other time he had, he was learning. Yeah, he was learning. It doesn't mean, I don't maintain that he lived in the house and he had this type of a courtship and every night they spoke and that. I don't think he really, when it says that he loved her, it doesn't mean that like what we relate to as love. He spent a lot of time together and personalities and understanding. It meant that he recognized her virtues and her values, but he wasn't courting. He wasn't spending time. He wasn't going on dates. He was totally immersed in his learning. He was totally immersed in his learning. He was totally immersed in his work. But I maintain that this deal was made between two parties. That this deal was made between Yaakov and Lavan, and at this point in time, Yaakov trusted his uncle. He was his uncle, the great man, the brother of his mother, Rivka. He assumed that from the virtues of the mother, the virtues of the family, and from the behavior that he could trust him. He had no reason. It didn't dawn on a person. It did not even dawn on him. That's my, I'm taking a totally different approach.
And nobody else knew about it.
And nobody knew about it, yeah. Nobody knew about it. That deal was made between two people. Now what happened was, in my opinion, that when the time came, See, again, I don't think that the like today they sent out invitations and, you know, come to the way. It wasn't the case that he's that the time was picked. He was very shrewd, blah, blah. Yeah, Yaakov was not involved in these particular areas. He was naive in these types of things. Given all of those factors, they came to the wedding, the people came, and quietly he then went to his daughter and told Leah that she's the one. Because and Rachel wasn't surprised by that, because she was the older daughter, and the older daughter comes first, and this is the arrangement, and in my opinion, Leah didn't know that there was any kind of a deception over here. The only question that remains is, what do you mean by Hiva Boker, Vihina Hilea? Bear in mind that the Psukim themselves do not indicate anything. You have to read the Psukim as though you never heard those Rashis about Simanim and all of that. For Rechob Bichraktan, I explained to you, makes perfect sense. Without, you don't need that explanation of Chazal. That's a deeper method medrash, but on the point level, it makes perfect sense. Now, what does it mean? It means to say that Lavan had total control over the situation due to the fact that nobody suspected him. Yaakov didn't suspect him, and that's why Yaakov did not take any particular precautions. He had no reason to assume that the person was lying because he trusted him. If he didn't trust him, why would he work 7 years? Why commit yourself? I don't think, if a person is a deceiver, you're not going to invest 7 years of your life with someone who already is a cheat. Yeah, 7 years of your life. See, for the second marriage, for the second marriage, Lavan said, Lavan, Malei Shvuazos. He says, wait for the 7 days. Don't interrupt the Simcha. Wait for the 7 days. And then he married Rachel, and then he worked the 7 years. But he worked the second 7 years, he worked after he got his goods, so to speak. But why? How do you explain that? That he put in 7 years of labor for a trickster? For a deceiver, just because on the reliance of the Samanim, that's going to save him? It's very hard. The fact that he put in 7 years would indicate to me that he absolutely trusted him. Who does a thing like that? We made a deal. Plus, there were no third parties. Well, why didn't Yaakov bring his third parties in? Why didn't he take him to court? Why didn't he make a whole deal out of this? Seems to me that there's no justification for that. Now, of course, the question is about the actual deception. Now, in my opinion, Leah did not know at all about this whole thing. That she was not the one that Yaakov had chosen. She was an innocent bystander, and Rachel certainly didn't know, and there were no simanim. I mean, it's factual. I'm not saying that any chazal has meaning, this idea, this concept. I'm saying, in terms of the pshat, in terms of establishing the actual story, I am saying we can explain it without having recourse to all of this. At no point in time, no point in time, excuse me, I was no point in time. Because you see, at no point in time was this ever revealed. That's a good point. Because if it was revealed, then Leah would never have given an argument to Rachel, how'd you take my wife? My husband, Ishu. Yaakov kept it quiet. This is the greatness of Yaakov. Because Yaakov didn't hate Leah. Yaakov didn't dislike Leah. Yaakov had no taina against Leah. Because he knew that she wasn't involved in the Ramos. He knew that that's why he went to Lavan, Valama and Yisani, it was you. Why did you do this to me? And now, of course, the question is, but how can it happen? How can a man be deceived about his wife? Now, given what I've told you about the character of Yaakov, that he was totally involved, he wasn't courting. He was involved, he was off in the field doing work. And when he wasn't working, they weren't going to the movies together. He was learning. Working and learning for 7 years. He had no reason to spend any time with Rachel. So really, he didn't know much about the voices, about the personalities, or anything at all like that. His only encounter with Rachel was when he first saw her. He first saw her in the field with the watering the sheep. She was a kid. Then, I would say, given another factor, at night, we all know that the Avos conducted themselves with the greatest sneers. With the greatest sneers. And of course, there was no light, and the Tashmish Hamitah was done in the dark, and there was sneers, and there wasn't extensive discussion, whatever. So of course, at night, he would have no... If a person is unsuspecting, bear that in mind. It says that she was beautiful and her eyes were dim. Yeah, that's in full daylight. But in the darkness, two sisters can appear, they were twins. In the darkness, it's not apparent. Lavan worked it out very carefully. Don't you understand that they had the party? The weddings weren't like today. The men would celebrate separately, the women would celebrate. Then after everybody was gone, it was dark. They had the tent prepared in a dark place, and at night there'd be no way of knowing. In the morning he recognized the difference. Because the difference between Rachel and Leah was something which he recognized in the morning. Then he realized he'd been deceived. But this makes sense only for a position. It's easy, you have to understand that a con man always works on someone who's absolutely not suspecting. They had no reason. I mean, that's when a con is most effective. A person walks into a situation, a place, and there's no, and you say, well, how did you get, I had no reason to suspect. I've been doing business every, you've been going to, a Super Soul or whatever, any store, catering, this, that, and you have, we've been doing for years with them. So you place an order, then you're making a big party. You put down, you give them the money, the cash, you give them the $1,000 or $2,000, then come Shabbos, and they're gone, left town, and your wife will say, how could you have put the money? How could I put the money then? I've been with these people for years. The person,
what?
Yeah, that's a confidence thing, exactly. A person can be deceived. But you see, a person who's suspicious is not going to be that easily deceived. It's, you can't have it both ways. To presume, you see, to take the other way, you've got many, many problems. First of all, why would the Rivka place Yaakov, who she knew was naive? Of the two sons, he was the naive one. In the hands of this killer, of this monster. What did she think would happen? Why wouldn't she prepare him? Also, if you can assume that he came there with all of these suspicions, then the protections that he took are very minimalistic. See? But if you learn the way I'm learning, it makes perfect sense that he never hated, I'll explain about this thing that she felt that she was hated. He never hated her, nor did he ever rebuke her, because he realized that was his greatness. His greatness was that why should he make her feel bad for something which was not her fault? And that's why you see later on that she couldn't accept the fact that he didn't love her. And then one child after another child, that's a separate question. Why did she finally get to... But the point is, that was something which is extremely painful for her, that her husband didn't love her. But if she participated in her Amos, it doesn't make sense that it was painful to her. I mean, then she knew from the start that he didn't choose her, he didn't want her. He bypassed her. That's a different thing. We'll take that up next week. But I'm saying it doesn't, but in the mind of Rachel, you do see that she couldn't accept the fact that she was hated. But if she, Leah couldn't accept the fact that she was hated, this explains many, many things. Because you can raise the question, why is she so upset? Why does she keep looking for the magical solution that he'll love her? It's not going to be. He doesn't want you. You're going to change reality. But given that she thought that she was chosen by him, that this was a normal situation, so then it's painful. Why didn't... And then she'd be upset with Rachel. You too. It's only because in her own mind, it had to be because you came into the picture. Had you not come into the picture, he'd have been happy with me. But once you came into the picture, he was more attracted to you. That's why she gives her an eye. And Rachel doesn't respond by saying... quite the contrary.
Are you saying they also
know that? That neither Leah nor Rachel had any idea. No point. He never revealed it because it was why he didn't want to reveal that he. He did not reveal that. It would have hurt. It would have hurt Leah. It would have caused problems. It never comes up in any discussion, even later on when he leaves. And he wants to convince them to leave. Well, I'll say though, why does Yaakov have such a tough time convincing? Because it wasn't such a tough time. They listened, but he had to convince the daughters that your father was a phony. They would have known better than him. They would have known from the first Ramah.
Right, and they themselves, they always said he sold us. They didn't say it.
Yeah,
the daughter. Anything when you leave yourself here,
then that is explainable. It could be.
She was older.
The same question would be with Lavan. How did Lavan maintain his position with his daughter? and he came face with them. Could be that that was the deal, that he wanted to marry both. And that's the way we worked it out. 7 years for this, 7 years for that. First you work 7 years, then you get the older one, because that's the Melech HaMakom. And then you marry Rachel, and you work this up. This was between Yaakov and Lavan. He says, Ma'alei Shavua Zelti. Yeah, he was very shrewd. He had it all worked out. But there's no indication later on, if this is the case, why would Yaakov have to appeal to them to leave? We can't say what your father is not trustworthy. Right. They knew it. They experienced it firsthand. There is no indication throughout. In my opinion, he was a Ramai. He tricked everybody. Rivka was a kid. Why do we have to assume that Rivka knew the character of Lavan? She left as a kid. And also what she had seen of Lavan was good things. The encounter with Eliezer. Hashem Yatzad Dava. He was very smooth. Look, we don't know at which point in time he became corrupt, whether he was corrupt at that time or not. But in all events, he was always very good at assuming a facade. Well, that doesn't seem to be funny. Because he says, Hashem Yatzad Dava. It seems that he was a complicated character. He was raised in the same family of Avram, so he had the correct ideas. Could be at that time he wasn't such a Ramai, or he wasn't such a Rashi. You see, he had good qualities. So I'm maintaining that there's no way that Rivka would have known, and that certainly that Yaakov knew. Okay. So that I'm maintaining that Yaakov was fooled by Lavan because he trusted him. I maintain also, I think a good argument, why would a person invest 7 years of his life with someone that he basically knew was a Rama from day one? It doesn't seem to make sense. If you're dealing, another fundamental premise was that part of the reason why he was able to be fooled was because he trusted. And it's easy to fool someone who doesn't suspect you at all. That's why a lot of people today get taken in business and so on and so forth. They have relatives or even a brother handling the books. And you find out from time to time, this person was involved in that, he trusted this person, and because he trusted him, whatever he told him, he accepted, because it never occurred to him that this person could be cheating him. Now, if that's the case, the fact that he would work for him for 7 years and not get an inkling as to his nature, that doesn't, in my opinion, is not a question at all. Because there was no salary, there was no wages, there was no sharing of profits. All this came about later on, after he decided that he wanted to leave, and Lavan wanted to stay. They made this deal, they made this agreement with the speckled cows and so forth. At this point in time, it was a beautiful arrangement. It was a beautiful arrangement. He was working for free. He wasn't for free, but the 7 years was not for salary. It was, in the end, he was going to get Rachel. So there was nothing to haggle about. That's a beautiful honeymoon. A lot of times you do volunteer work. And as long as it's volunteer, so then you'll never get to see the other side of the person. Now, Yaakov was not going to look at his other dealings. He's taking care of the sheep. So he was entrusted with the sheep. At this point, Yaakov is Ishtam. He's the same Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Oholim. He hasn't really gone through any of these experiences that changed him and then taught him how to really fight, how to be cunning, and so on and so forth. That comes in my opinion, that's the change. This is the dramatic turning point in his life. After he was cheated by Lavan, he became a different person, and he realized that now he has to act in a different way. He has to learn the tools of Ramah. But there's nothing, that doesn't constitute a problem. To the contrary, the fact that he would work for 7 years and not try to find out about, if he thought he was dealing with a deceiver, he would have tried to get information about how he operates and his techniques and so on and so forth. And then as the wedding came closer, he would look for signs that there was going to be some kind of a mess-up. The fact that he so innocently walks into this trap, to me, indicates that he wasn't prepared for one. The truth is, in reality, in day-to-day reality, you could work for a person, and this happens all the time, and when the person is caught, he was involved in all kinds of deals, and the workers would say he was just most honest, the sweetest person. When we he took care of our family when we were sick and this and that. You don't see what's going on in the other areas. It's like if you're working for someone, you're the boss, and you will judge him essentially by how he treats you, unless he's involved in open scams. I mean, but obviously Lovin was very slick. He was very deceitful, and everything that had to do with you was very pleasant. Now, whatever interchange there was between Yaakov and Lovin had to be pleasant because they were not involved in any kind of issues of money. So it's a beautiful relationship. And many, many times you'll have a relationship like that, as long as it's voluntary. And once you want money, it's a different story. Goes without saying that Lovin was the ultimate Ramalai. He was able to deceive people because of his exterior. He knew. Look how he spoke to him. Achi, achi, asa vavar tani chinam, agi delima maskar techa. I mean, he came across as being a wonderful person. Again, how would he work from the second 7 years?
Not the second 7 years, it's the 20.
On the with regard to the second wife, there, Lavan gave Rachel right away, and then he put the 7 years in. That he wouldn't do anymore. That he wouldn't put it in. The first time around, he put in 7 years with no guarantees. What was his guarantee? That he was going to get what he wanted. I mean, according to anyone, don't you have to maintain that there was a certain amount of trust of Lavan? I'll tell you why. This is something that's just occurring to me right now. You're telling me that he knew he was a Rami, so why would he trust him? What protection did he have? Did he have it on paper? Did he have any kind of protection? After he was deceived, all he could do was go and complain to Lavan, Valama Rini Sani. Why didn't he bring out his documents, his contract, whatever? Why would a person go to work and put in 7 years for a Rami? The question is a question on, the other way around. The first time around, why would a person make such a huge investment and get nothing, no protection whatsoever, unless he trusted him? And if you're saying he knew he was a Rami there, so what did he do to protect himself? Oh, he gave this imanim. Yeah, but how did he know that Lavan would keep his end in the deal? Maybe he would find some other...
But
it says very clearly. Look at the puzzle. The issue that to me it's not relevant. It would make it easier if they're twins. It would make the case easier because it might, if that's the case, it would make it more difficult in the dark for Yaakov to detect. For Yaakov, the way I understand it, is that Yaakov. Why didn't he bring out his documents, his contract, whatever? Why would a person go to work and put in 7 years for a Rama? The question is a question on, the other way around. The first time around, why would a person make such a huge investment and get nothing, no protection whatsoever, unless he trusted him? And if you think he knew he was a Rama there, so what did he do to protect himself? Oh, he gave this imanim. Yeah, but how did he know that Lavan would keep his end in the deal? Maybe he would find some other...
But
it says very clearly. Look at the puzzle. The issue that... To me, it's not relevant. It would make it easier if they're twins. It would make the case easier because it might... If that's the case, it would make it more difficult in the dark to Yaakov... to detect. For Yaakov, the way I understand it, is that Yaakov was, you could fool a person, although it's not easy to fool a person on something like this, but if you're talking about a tzaddik who was totally involved in learning, he was not involved in trivial activities, that later on in the triumph, when Yosef fought the grandchild, Ryan Menashe, he said, who are these? He did not spend his time the time of day, the way we can't project our own way of living onto him, that he was, hanging around dating on Saturday night, dating. I mean, it doesn't make sense. He was a much older man. She was very, very young. The whole essence of the story there revolves around that everything they did was to build the shift they call Klal Yisrael. He said about Reuven, Kochi Voracious Honey. All of his energy, that meant that all of his energy was involved in Torah. So I don't think, now, if that is the case, if you're unsuspecting and it's absolute tenuous and it's in the dark and the girls, according to, if you want to accept the fact that they were twins, so then there's going to be whatever talk, the voices are going to be the same, so then you have no reason to suspect. I'm sure there was minimal conversation, whatever conversation there was, the voices would be the same, and I don't think he would have had that kind of a relationship. Bear in mind, when he met Rachel, she was a kid. And this is 7 years later. Those are things I believe we'd have to assume. And if you don't assume that, if you assume that he really spent a lot of time, really got to know her, then he couldn't have been tricked. Because this, what do you mean let him? Everyone is assuming that you... Once you assume that you need some money, so you're assuming that he's, without the money he wouldn't recognize. Why do you need some money? You're going to be spending time, you know the person, because you spend so much time with the person. So even without some money,
usually at night.
My point is also, but if he was really truly suspicious, why wouldn't he have taken real absolute proof? Absolute proof. Yeah. What's the question? Medrash of Barakla Bidcha Katana does not prove it's a medrash. But if you don't want to take the medrash literally, if you want me to explain why the question, why does that say Barakla Bidcha Katana? That's a medrash. I don't think the plain shot is that the Torah recorded this to make it iron clear that he couldn't substitute somebody else. Because if you don't trust the person, he could always renege on a deal. How is this going to happen? It seems very weak protection. What kind of protection is it? I mean, if it's that level where he'll change her name to Rachel, so therefore it's Rachel Bila, excuse me, he'll take a Rachel out of the shop, so therefore Rachel Bitcher. And if it's Katana, the Bitcher Katana, then we'll switch the names, and therefore you have to have Rachel Bitcher Katana. All that, if you tell me that he's suspected to that nth degree, to that extreme, then it becomes extremely difficult. Then he should have taken further precautions. What I'm saying is Rachel Bitcha Katana, it's claim shot fits into the Evot Chosheva Shonim. The question is why did he offer to work for 7 years? That's a tremendous amount. Why would a person give up 7 years of labor? Oh, because he realized it was Rachel Bitcha Katana. He realized that there was a Minhag HaMakom. He realized that it wasn't the norm, and but he had not absolute. You'll make exceptions. In other words, I'll make you an offer that's so sweet that you won't refuse. For Rachel Bitcha Katana, because since it's Bitcha Katana, that's why I'm willing to make such a big offer. That's how I explain it. So he says like this. He says, complete the 7 days of the Sheva Brachos. V'nidno gamazos b'avodah shetav v'nin od Sheva Shem Achecha. He struck a hard bargain. V'yash Yaakov Kei. V'yamalei shvuozos. Yaakov listened. He went through the 7 days of Sheva Brachos. V'yitin lo esrach abito lo l'isha. V'yitin lo l'rach abito et spilo shifchoso lo l'lo shifcho. V'yavo gamo rachel. V'yav gamas rachel milayah. It's interesting. And why does the pasuk have to mention that? In telling us that he worked another 7 years, it says first that he married her, and then he loved her more than Leah. What is the pasuk telling you over here? Is that, I mean, you could say even though he was cheated, he was deceived, and maybe by rights he didn't have to, but he kept his word. But this time was different. This time, you see, the 7 years, he really had love on. He was in a position where he could have cheated him because he had what he wanted. But he was not, love on didn't say to him, work another 7 years and then I'll give you Rachel. That was ridiculous. That's not going to happen. Of course he wouldn't have done that. He realized he made a mistake the first time. This time he gave him, this was the reverse. Now he gave the goods, so to speak, he gave Rachel. And he trusted Yaakov would do the 7 years. The prophet was telling you that Yaakov, even though he was deceived, and the average individual would say, oh, now I got what I want. It's enough. And enough I was forced to work for Leah. I don't want Leah altogether. I've got what I want. And he could have left at that point. The average person would have left. Why should I put it? I worked my 7 years. The truth of the matter is, he worked his 7 years. He was deceived. But Yaakov decided to keep his word. And it is connected to the fact that that's the point. He married Rachel. He had what he wanted. He loved her. He could have left now, but he kept his word regardless. Because even though he was deceived, whatever the case was, he gave his word, he kept his word. So he worked another 7 years. But this is, clearly, Lavan would not have told him to work another 7 years, and then I'll let you marry Rachel. That wouldn't have happened. I was maintaining that one of the issues is that really, how would Yaakov have known that Lavan was a Rami? And I guess you'd have to say, well, Rivka would have told him. But I'm maintaining that Rivka... if you take a look at the Pesukim, without any predisposition towards assuming that Lavan is a Rami, then how he behaved with Eliezer, it seems that you get the impression the person was a big tzaddik, because he tells him over the whole story. He's telling him about the plan that he made and so on, and how it happened and everything, and then they both responded, "May Hashem yatzadava." Now that means that they believed in God and they were convinced about God's providence, and they wanted the door to enter into the house of Avraham. It was whatever they knew about Avraham was that he was a big tzaddik. And yes, Lo Nuchal, God has spoken, we can't say one thing or another. From this you're going to derive the impression this person is as evil? Quite the contrary. The average individual doesn't care about this when it comes to Shaduchim. Why should his daughter go to leave their own country, go to a strange land, because of the Avraham who represents the true ideas of renounces idolatry? Why? Because Hashem has said all these things in positive. If you don't have any preconceived notion, you're going to say these are from the responses he big predicted. Then all they, it doesn't say that. You know that they were trying to deter. Excuse me. There's no proof that they wanted to deter the entire thing. If they wanted to deter the entire thing, they could have stopped it. And they said she's too young. They could have said she's too young. All they said was, "Well, give us time to prepare." Yavim alasa. So Rashi says it's a few months. A few months, or 10 months, a year, whatever. I'm sorry?
A year or 10 months.
Yes, a yamim or asa. Yamim means a year, according to Rashi, and asa has to be less. So, or 10 months. All they were asking for was a year, which is normal. So that we have time to adequately prepare, because she was young. So Larry Ezra didn't want to do that. Rightfully so. Who knows what can happen? So he said, don't Hashem is pleased with you. So he's arguing that it's wrong to do that. Then they said, Nishalasia, whatever she says. So they gave her the option. If they really were intent upon stopping us from going, why'd they give her the option? They could have said, no, we can't do that.
Even if Sarah was even.
And they gave her the option, and she chose to go, and they gave her with blessings. They sent her off with blessings and everything, and with Menekes, the Menikta, Menekes went with her, and so forth. But where do you see from this that a person would emerge with a negative impression of Lavan's behavior? Fancy Chazal said Psuel, because it doesn't Chazal say that Psuel was taken removed from the picture, right? Because he was opposed. So there that. The Beit Chazal, because he's not mentioned. The truth of the matter is, again, at the plain level, it emphasizes love on. Okay, by Yomer Achia Ve'Ima, Teishev Anar Eitan Yomer Olas Aracha Telech. So by Yomer Achia Ve'Ima, Ubesuel Heichen Hoya, and where was Besuel? Hoya wrote to La'akev. He wanted to hold it back. Uvam Malach Vamiso. So the Torah speaks to Suel. Yeah, but Lavan? Lavan was not the one who wanted to be Ma'akev. If anything, even according to Chazal, if anyone wanted to be Ma'akev, it's to Suel. That's why Chazal say he died. But the plain shot, if by Yom Rachia V'Ima, it depicts Achia as being the one. He is given the credit as being the one who gives the go ahead. He says, Teishem and I tell you, they're not criticized for that. That's not considered to be equal. Because that very pasuk eliminates the Suel. And the Suel is eliminated because he was involved in equal. But this is not. All they wanted, they were saying, we should have time to prepare.